Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury, and in this ASI cast, we're discussing how television is likely to develop in the near future. Graham Lovelace, our Media Technologies Director, discusses the prospects with Nigel Wally, CEO of the Antenna Group. The progression from a simple receive-only TV set to what Nigel refers to as the television in the connected and converged era might appear straightforward and relatively easy. A closer examination establishes quite quickly that there's a great deal that still needs to be done to make the promise one that can and will be readily embraced by the consumer.
Thank you, Mike, and welcome to this ASI cast with me, Graham Lovelace, and thanks to the internet, Nigel Wally, the chairman of the media advisory Antenna Group. Good to have you, Nigel.
Hello, morning. Thank you for having me.
Nigel will be joining the innovation panel at this year's ASI TV and Video Conference when we'll be looking at TV's continuing evolution. Now, Nigel has a framework that describes the journey that television has been on, starting with a simple receive-only TV set right the way through to what he calls today's connected and converged era. Nigel, connected and converged, it actually sounds quite orderly, but is that the case?
I think the ultimate outcome is intended to be orderly, but the early impetus for this new wave of innovation that we're seeing in TV is actually just is a tidy up. We're in an era at the moment which is a brilliant era to be a TV consumer because there's so much being thrown at you. There's so much content, but also so many different overlapping and competing propositions. And I'm sure that most of us, if we looked at our phones or our tablets, would find somewhere between 5 and 10 apps that we could watch some kind of telly or video through. And I think where we've got to at the end of a decade of perpetual innovation is a huge number, as I say, of competing and overlapping propositions. And I think that the impetus for this next stage, what we are calling connected and converged, is a tidy up, is a simplification, and of course, by definition, that means probably a reduction in the number of players in the market as either people go bust or get eaten up into these bigger concerns. So we're looking at much simpler propositions. We're seeing it from consumers. We're seeing a kind of what we call an app weariness. Consumers want that extra bit of content, but just can't be bothered to set up a new app, set up a new login, put their details into a new system. They're looking now for kind of a reaggregation into much bigger and simpler propositions.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So you're predicting consolidation in the market. So who, in your view, what type of players are likely to come out on top of this? Will they be the pay TV operators, telcos, the US high techs?
It's really interesting because there's clearly new players coming into a part of the market that have been reasonably stable across Europe and around the world for the last few years. So we've been used to this reasonably simple divide between broadcasters and the pay and free platforms. And I think what we're seeing now is that people are questioning where could and should innovation happen in this next wave? Is it the broadcasters who need to innovate, or is it the platforms? And I personally, and this is very much a decipher opinion, for us, it feels like that the platforms are the places where innovation can and should happen because they have the ability to invest in new infrastructure requirements. So they have the ability to invest in new devices, in artificial intelligence, in voice systems. And all of those things are too big and too expansive for individual broadcasters to do on their own. So first statement is that we're expecting the weight of innovation to happen at the platform end of the value chain.
Yep.
But that's not to say it will be the same traditional platforms that we've known for a long time. So in most markets around Europe, people will be familiar with the dominant cable platforms and satellite platforms, and there will be brands that we recognize who've been there for a long time. But suddenly this year we've seen Amazon come into the market with what looks like the beginnings of quite a significant platform play, which includes a lot of consumer premise equipment. So suddenly we're all looking at the implications of Amazon Echo and Amazon Dot and all sorts of other in-home equipment. And we've seen Google do the same thing. So it's now possible to build yourself an almost credible future TV platform in your home using Android tellies, Chromecasts, Google Homes, etc. So suddenly, in each market or each region, the previously dominant pay TV platforms are under threat from this new competition. And our our feeling is that some will rise to the challenge and innovate and invest in this new generation of tech and services, and others may fall by the wayside. But we will end up in a few years' time with a consumer choice of platform in our homes from, as I say, a couple of recognisable names in each region, but also a couple of new and surprising names.
Now, within your framework, Nigel, connected converged, that's not the end point in your view, is that right? You also see that this sort of future is potentially going to be delivered by the cloud, and there might not be any set-top box in the home at all. Is that right?
The implications of cloud on TV are kind of so various and so expansive that sometimes it's hard to kind of simplify it down into simple, understandable terms. We see an end game of a wholly cloud TV service, but by saying that, it kind of implies that cloud isn't currently having a huge implication, and of course it is. And our premise in our framework is that in the current era that we're just leaving now, a huge amount of the cloud innovation has actually been behind the scenes. So yes, we're all using some broadcaster apps and we're using Netflix on phones and those kind of things. But actually, very quietly behind the scenes, the TV industry has rebuilt itself and reorganized itself in a cloud-centric way. So a lot of the current innovation around cloud appears to be wholesale infrastructure, media management and storage and those kind of things. And over the next couple of stages, the implications of cloud come forward into the consumer space in much greater way. So in this connected and converged era, we're expecting to see things like cloud-hosted personal video recorders, so cloud PVRs, and other cloud services taking more and more of the weight. And ultimately, there is this conceptual endgame of wholly cloud services. But of course, within that, you've got the comparative debate between broadcast as a distribution mechanism for live linear telly and IPTV streaming. And I think that there is a lot of us who believe that until every single home in every part of every region has got a gigabyte broadband, then in reality, the broadcast delivery of television is still a strong and robust competitor to IP. And I think realistically, most of us will be in our dotage in retirement homes before we get a gigabyte broadband to the most remotest parts of you know, Europe in particular. Whilst we can conceptually plot a journey to a wholly cloud or a wholly IP television future, I think the reality that most of us foresee for the rest of our careers, at least, is broadcast having a core role for mass telly. If we're looking for large mass audiences to watch live, linear, scheduled television programming at the same time, then within the mix, broadcast is going to be a reasonably dominant player. So yes, cloud is a lovely conceptual endgame. It feels like it's much further than you would think.
In your view, will viewers still want to record programs when potentially everything they ever want to watch is in the cloud?
Again, what's been interesting as we move from this current era and into this next era is our definitions of things like recording are starting to blur. We used to have a very clear idea of the difference between recording something and using an on-demand service. And recording something was something I did with a piece of kit in my lounge. And using an on-demand service was something I did, pulling down content over the internet from a service that was hosted in the cloud. And those two things were very separate, and I understood the difference. Yeah. But what we're seeing is a kind of a twofold swap of functionality. So on-demand, very quietly, has been drifting down into the home. So there's quite a few operators who use things like PushVod or VOD hosted on PVRs. So one of the things we've been saying is, oddly, that VOD has jumped into the home. And we're seeing a lot of kind of on-demand content hosted in what are effectively now servers in our homes very quietly. And this isn't new. Sky were doing PushVod onto unconnected hard drives 10, 15 years ago. But at the same time, my recording capability is going the opposite direction. And I'm being increasingly offered the chance to store video content and record video content in cloud services. So VOD and PVR are kind of swap places. Which is like a 21st century version of the Negroponte switch in a way.
Remind us what the Negroponte switch is.
Well, Nick Negroponte, the digital philosopher, as it were, the MIT professor, he a long time ago said everything that was up in the air would go into a pipe, and everything that was currently into a pipe would go up in the air. Yeah. So he was positing the fact that that TV, which was broadcast, and phones, which went over a phone line, would swap places, that you'd end up with cable TV and wireless phones. And in a way, what we're seeing now is a kind of a similar kind of fundamental swapping of functions. However, taking that on one step further, what we're seeing in some of the new tele systems is that people are being given the opportunity to record something. And I use record with my fingers making a quotation mark around the word.
Yes.
But actually, the program I've recorded, invisible to me as a consumer, may be on my set-top box, it may be on the cloud, or it may actually not be recorded at all.
Yes.
And it may actually, my recording may just be a bookmark pointing to an on-demand show.
Yes.
And we've been testing with consumers at the moment in London on the new Sky Q system, which is rolled out in the UK and Ireland and is rolling out across Europe. And we asked a group of consumers who had Sky Q to go and find a program in the system and play it. And after a few moments, we asked them whether they knew if they were watching a recorded or an on-demand show. And they didn't know because of the way the system was designed. And so increasingly, what we're saying is actually the concept of recording is really more about creating a page of bookmarks.
Yes.
Letting the platform decide where that recording is held. Is it actually held as a recording? Or is it actually something which just links me to an available on-demand file? And I think from a viewer and consumer point of view, our respondents in our research group said something really interesting. When we pointed out that they seemed to be unaware that they were watching, whether they were watching a recording or an on-demand show, a lot of them asked the deeply philosophical question, does it matter?
Yes.
And of course, as a consumer or a viewer, no, it doesn't matter. If I want to be able to point at a show and press notionally a record function and have that show available to me in my lovely list of recordings, how the platform deigns to hold and deliver that to me, I don't care. As long as it plays when I press play. And so we're beginning to see the blurring of PVR and VOD from a number of different ways, which is really fascinating.
And the other advantage there, I guess, for the bookmarking it setup that you just described is the ability to say, I want to watch this program on this particular device, and then maybe pick up exactly at that point where you finish watching on that device, but then you're on a completely separate device. But the system, the brain, as it were, knows which program and which point you're viewing across different devices.
Exactly. Now, this would have been futurology about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But suddenly we're actually seeing this functionality arriving in television platforms in US and Europe today. The idea that you can get halfway through a show on one device and then pick up this in the same place on a different device somewhere else, either in the home or out of the home, has gone from being this kind of wishful thinking to a tech reality in a very short space of time, which is great. So the boxes and the systems running our telly are becoming increasingly intelligent and able to service us.
Okay, at the conference, we're going to be looking at data and how it's driving new personalization and monetization opportunities. Data, of course, is key in devising new forms of targeted advertising. How is that developing in your view? Are media agencies, platform owners, broadcasters even, are they all on the same page?
They're all pointing in the same direction. Whether you can claim they're on the same page yet, I would challenge. And I think that there are still some fundamental principles for TV that we haven't yet properly got to ground with. And you mentioned personalization. That's a great example. One of the things we've been saying in this rush for data and targeting and addressability is that television historically comes from a culture that understands audiences and groups and numbers. And our measurement systems have always kind of mapped onto that. So we measure large groups of people. A lot of the concepts that come out of Silicon Valley are concepts which understand the individual. So user, login, personalization, all of those concepts come from a culture which understands what we call one face, one screen. If I'm watching video on my iPad, you pretty much got a good example that you good idea that it's me and I'm logged in and you know who I am. If I'm watching telly with my whole family in the lounge, I'm an audience. And I think at the moment, the industry is getting slightly confused over where those principles can be exchanged. We've seen some of the new television platforms talking about bringing personalization into TV, but actually what they're talking about is household level targeting, which is really just a slightly cleverer data-infused thing we've done in television for years and years. The agencies have always targeted at household level based on program choice. But the platforms are talking about personalization, and very often they're getting confused about what they mean. So in the industry, in Decipher, we're beginning to talk about audience media and user media. We don't like some of the other words because they're a bit blurry. And I think what we need is to understand when we're capturing data on audiences and when we're capturing data on users, individuals, because those two things aren't always the same. So the advertising you can map onto those data sets obviously is very different. So increasingly we're examining the tension between the audience media part of television and the individual user part of the television industry, and working out what we need. And we're probably going to need new measurement techniques in both of those areas. We're still big fans of audience measurement, you know, the TAM, BARB system of audience measurement for large broadcast media. It may have to be enhanced for some of the smaller niche channels with more set-top box data, but that's all of that is still audience measurement. I think that the Silicon Valley has the user stuff pretty well taped, and TV just needs to learn which bits of it wants to exploit.
Yes. Is there any one particular body that is leading that bringing the various parties together, the Silicon Valley view, as you say, and the traditional broadcast view?
I must admit, I'm rather cynical about this, but I haven't seen good thinking around this area yet. There is lots of talk, particularly amongst the agency world, of bringing their programmatic systems into television. But a lot of it is very much about a technological solution. You know, we can plug an Ethernet cable into the back of a set-top box, therefore we must be able to do addressability into television.
Yeah.
When actually a lot of the conversations haven't yet properly addressed some of the cultural issues that you're swapping from user media into audience media. Also some of the technological issues, like the fact that most of the television environment doesn't allow for cookies to log in.
Yes.
All of the programmatic systems are predicated on. So I think we still have some basic building block steps to go through, some of which are commercial. We need agencies and broadcasters to really understand how they're going to measure and value and price some of this new stuff. And some of them are technical. You know, we don't yet have across Europe television systems that can do addressability in any meaningful way. So we're in the early foothills of this new kind of mountain range. We're not at the top yet.
Now, Inese, we're also going to be looking at new forms of content discovery and control. Voice, of course, and you mentioned this before, is a very hot topic right now. But what are the implications of Google, with its Google Home device and Amazon Echo, being used to navigate TV?
There's a couple of parts to the answer, if I may. First of all, there's kind of a technical part of the answer. We're beginning to see a split in the platforms across Europe between those big ones who will develop their own solutions, and I think, you know, Sky and Virgin, Sky and UPC on a pan-European basis will both develop in-house systems that support their proposition. And then the smaller telcos, particularly the smaller platforms, particularly the telco platforms, seem to be planning a strategy which is about opening up their systems so that they are compatible with Google and Amazon. So we'll probably see the television industry take a couple of technical approaches to achieving voice control.
Yes.
And ultimately, we'll probably end up having to see a lot of integration between the systems. Even a big pan-European platform like UPC with its own internal TiVo-based voice system will probably have to learn to link to an Alexa or a Google Home, because those things will exist in people's houses. So I'm guessing ultimately we'll see integration between the voice systems.
Yes.
But all of that is a technical answer. For the television industry, from a content and discovery point of view, voice brings some really interesting challenges. And it's an odd thing to be talking about in a kind of tech context, but brand is suddenly becoming an issue. The consumer or the viewer's ability to see and understand channel brands in a world where I can voice search straight to a program brand.
Yes.
And one of the concerns that's bubbling up, at least one of the challenges that the broadcast part of the industry is going to have to rethink about, is how do we want to design interfaces that protect and enhance channel brands within the mix if we can allow people to avoid them? We've been doing some early consumer testing with voice search. And we asked a load of consumers in research groups to go and find a program and play it. And after a few moments, we asked them which channel it came from. And only about half knew which channel some of these programs came from, because they hadn't seen the channel on their journey into that program. They hadn't seen the visual cues on screen. And so from a channel branding point of view and a program branding point of view, search strips out a lot of the traditional visual cues that we've been playing with in television interfaces. And it's beginning to be a bit of a brand challenge. And the TV industry, the broadcast part of the industry, hadn't been that worried about search as a function previously because it didn't get used very often. When we look at the way search on television is used on normal television platforms today, because it's clunky and because you have to type in all the letters, search tends to be an edge case use. Not many people use it, and they only tend to use it for movies or for box sets, which are deep in the archive. Yeah. And most people say that if they know they can browse to a thing they want, they would tend to browse rather than search. So we were never worried about the way the platforms presented search outcomes because they only got used every now and then. Voice has changed this, which is really interesting, because voice actually works. And if you look at the voice systems, again, on things like Sky and UPC, it works really well and really quickly, and consumers are suddenly realizing they like it. We are now suddenly slightly alarmed that we hadn't concentrated enough on the screen design, the discovery screens, where the platforms are showing search returns. And we did an experiment with the BBC in London, and we showed that if you voice search for EastEnders, you had a search return that gave you all the available EastEnders episodes without any reference to the BBC on the page at all.
Wow.
On two different platforms. No logos, no logos on metadata, no logos on thumbnails, no logos on the page, no BBC reference in the metadata. And this is obviously BBC crown jewels, the EastEnders. So for a search return to do that has... again, never used to be alarming because people didn't tend to search for EastEnders, but now it is alarming because voice has meant that they use more search and they use it for different things, including live telly and recorded telly. And so we have this great situation. We have this huge consumer innovation, which we love, but it's scaring the hell out of channel and program brand people.
Thank you very much, Nigel. Nigel Wally there, the chairman of the media advisory group Antenna, who'll be joining us at the innovation panel at this year's ASI TV and video conference in Nice. Thank you, Nigel.
Thank you.
You can listen to other ASI cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.